Welcome and thank you for joining us today for Bring Out the Talent. My name is Maria Melfa and I am the president and CEO of the Training Associates, otherwise known as TTA.
And my name is Jocelyn Allen. I'm a talent recruitment manager here at TTA and we're thrilled to have you join us.
We're so excited to have Anne Bonney join us today. Anne is an energetic international motivational keynote speaker and trainer. After moving 27 times, attending 13 different schools, from K through master's, living on four continents, and having six distinct and successful careers, change has become Anne's comfort zone, and embracing the discomfort that comes with it has helped her lead a fun and fulfilling life. Anne is also an authority on change management, best-selling author of Get Them Over It, a podcast host of Ignite Your Influence, and an experienced leadership workshop facilitator. After 20 years in highly successful corporate and nonprofit leadership positions, Anne now uses her experience, education, and expertise to ignite her audience's courage and empowerment skills to embrace the challenges that transition brings. Welcome, Anne.
Thank you so much.
Yay! I'm so excited to have Anne here with us today. I mean, it doesn't get any better than two supercharged, dynamic, fiery redheads and the CEO of a super awesome women's owned business to get the party started. So yes. Just want to put that out there. We brought you on, as Maria said, because we love speaking with you. We've had a lot of engagement with you and worked on a ton of different projects. We get nothing but wonderful feedback about the things that you've done and the change that you've helped people make in their organizations and individually. So why not put you out there to everybody else to hear what you have to offer? So what led you to become so passionate about change management?
Well, you know, as Maria was talking about, I've dealt with a lot of change. And I know how hard it is for people. You know, after moving every 1, 2, or 3 years throughout your entire youth, change becomes easy and it sort of becomes the norm. And sometimes I find myself changing things just to change them, which, you know, whatever, sometimes that sounds sort of great. But I also recognize how hard it is sometimes for people to take on change, especially in organizations where there are so many professional issues and organizational issues, but there's also personal issues. And that makes it a really difficult thing to take on. And so with my unique background, I have that expertise to be able to ignite people's courage to take on change and give them some skills to be able to do it.
And you are about to finish your second book, is that correct?
Yes, literally this week.
That is fantastic.
I'm uploading it hopefully today.
Do you have a name for the book yet?
Yeah, actually, Get Them Over It is the second one. Get Over It's the first one.
Okay.
And so Get Over It is for personal dealings with change, dealing with the discomfort of change yourself, and then Get Them Over It. The second one is for managers and leaders to help their teams through change.
Why did you decide to write a book?
Well, as a speaker, it's just one of those things you kind of do. And yes. I wanted to see if I could do it. Mm-hmm. It's one of those projects that is like giving birth, kind of having never given birth. Yes. I can make that parallel. It's so probably nothing like it. But there's a level of perseverance and suffering that happens in creating this little baby. I wanted to see if I could do it. And I felt like it was a great way to get my message across in my voice. You know, I'm not the first one saying this stuff, and I recognize that, but I can say it in a way that makes it fun, that makes it a little sticky. It's a tip book. You know, both of them are tip books. So it's not like you sit down and you read chapter after chapter. You sit down, and I joke about leaving it on the back of the toilet, because sometimes that's the only time we have a couple minutes free, you know? So you read one tip, you marinate on that all day, and hopefully not only does it give you some skills to move through whatever change you're dealing with in the moment, but it also gives you a little laugh.
Now, you said that you have kind of a different background and different experience that makes, you know, change part of natural human function, right? So can you tell us a little bit more about your background in your own words? Because it is very interesting. And I think maybe going beyond the bio a little bit would be nice to hear.
Sure. Yeah, I got home from second grade in the spring of some year really long time ago. And my parents said, hey, guys, we're moving to Saudi Arabia. And I didn't know what that meant. My brother asked a bunch of questions and they said, you know, little Annie, what do you think? And I said, well, I got places to go and people to see. This is now been a quote in my family for the whole life. So we moved to Saudi Arabia. You know, this is little blonde girl moving to an Arab country where, you know, you very much feel other. We were Americans in a country that doesn't have tourism, in a very different culture, in a very different religious background, in a very different social culture. So, you know, that was a huge change. You know, 7 or 8 years old, it's just kind of like, oh, okay, this is what we're doing now. And then when I was 10, we moved to Egypt. When I was 11, we moved to Greece. We lived in Greece for 4 years. Then I went to boarding school in northern Michigan, actually an art school, to sing opera in the woods for 3 years of my last 3 years of high school. So that was super fun. So all of that change, all of those different people, having to walk up to people and be like, hi, I'm Anne. I'd like to be your friend. You know, I mean, you get used to the uncomfortable things that come with change, like fear of failure, you know, and there's been so many times where I have failed and I have fallen down and it hasn't gone well and it's been ugly and I survived that too. And so you start to realize as you go through all these changes and all these times where it doesn't go so well and then times that it does go well, that it's really not that bad. And it gives you that courage to jump out. So that was part of it. And then I've also had kind of a crazy career background. When I was at the art school, I wanted to be a Broadway star and then realized I didn't want that lifestyle. And so became a teacher. I taught special ed for a couple years and then went to SeaWorld and saw the Killer Whale show and saw my dream job. So I started volunteering right down the street from you all at the aquarium in Boston. And then got hired there as a trainer for seals and sea lions. Did that for a few years. Then moved to Arizona where there's no water. So my sea lion career was over. But got to work with birds of prey and train birds of prey in the desert of Arizona, which was super cool. And unfortunately, it was at the time in one of the most negative human environments I'd ever been in. And anybody who's ever had a boss that was manipulative or negative or been in a work culture where it's negative and you don't know whether somebody's patting you on the back or stabbing you in the back and don't talk to this person and don't say that and don't tell them this, you know how ugh, that is, you know, and how, what a drain it is. And so this was the beginning of my understanding of the importance of positive leadership and the importance of emotional intelligence in the workplace and in dealing with other people. Then I moved to Baltimore, decided I needed a big kid job, answered an ad in the newspaper, if that tells you how old it was, and worked for Under Armour for about 8.5 years from 2001 until 2010, and grew with that company. Incredible change going on there, incredible positive leadership. I mean, we all felt like we were part of that team and we were making something happen, and we did. And the incredible growth during that time was fantastic. Fantastic. Then left there to go to a group exercise company out of New Zealand called Les Mills. You probably have it at Boston Sports Clubs there in your neighborhood. And then I actually went to the company who owns Boston Sports Clubs and ran their whole 160 club chain, their group exercise. So I sort of ran that whole division. And then decided I wanted to pay for my own health insurance and went off to be a motivational speaker. So that was about 5.5 years ago. So that's kind of all the change that's gone on, not only in my own, by my choosing, but around me as things have developed.
Quite a incredible story.
Your lack of energy must have made that really difficult to manage.
I know. That's absolutely amazing. So do you still try to sing opera?
In the shower or in the car after an endurance race when my endorphins are pumping. But fortunately, in neither of those places does anybody have to listen to it because the sounds that come out are not like they used to be.
Well, certainly an amazing background. So it seems like part of your philosophy is trying to make being uncomfortable from change fun.
Well, yeah. I mean, let's laugh about it because it sucks, right? You know, I mean, like change is hard and change makes us get out of our comfort zone, which by definition is uncomfortable. So we might as well laugh about it. We might as well normalize it. You know, sometimes when we're in the depths of change and the pandemic's a perfect example of this, where we're all like, what is going on right now? Sometimes all we can do is just look at each other and have a laugh and realize that we're not the only ones that are a complete disaster, and that's okay, you know? And so it's normalizing the discomfort and the chaos and the blech and being able to laugh about it a little bit.
I mean, you make some good points because I believe, I mean, I'll speak to it. Our culture here at TTA is very much about the humor through everything, you know, making every day fun. Because, you know, if your work isn't challenging, I feel as though it's not necessarily rewarding. The harder you work and then the results that you see, it's like, oh, that is so gratifying. I knew this could work. And how do you get through that? You make it fun.
Yeah. And sometimes the work isn't gratifying and you just have to do it anyway. Mm-hmm. And so if you can turn and throw a paperclip at the guy at the desk next to you and have a little silly laugh about it, you know, that makes it okay. Like, yeah, okay, I don't like doing this, but I'm with these cool people and let's keep going.
Okay, so paper clips, not staplers and tape dispensers.
No, I
just need to clarify.
I actually do have a few bottles of silly string in my office and I have sprayed it at people in the past. So
so good.
Yeah, that's always so fun to do.
Yes.
No, yeah, it's absolutely true. I know last March when we shut down on March 10th, we had a meeting here and we said, everybody, we are working from home and have no idea how long it's going to take, just like all the other organizations. We did have a lot of cancellations that week, and I did go home for a night or two, a little bit freaking out, saying, oh my God, what am I going to do? But then, you know what? It just bounced back up. I mean, this is life, this is business, and we did, you know, we had some good laughs. We started watching, I think, as a company, Tiger King, and had some, you know, fun. Exactly. Started having some fun meetings on that, right. You know, dressing up like Carol Baskin. So, you know, we just did what we can do, you know, it's, mm-hmm. you can't control, you know, everything, but you can control how you handle it. And that's exactly what you're talking about in change management.
Exactly. And I think people are going to come out of this pandemic a little better at change, mm-hmm. because we all did exactly what you did. It was like, oh, crap. And then it's like, okay, let's make it work because we don't have a choice. Mm-hmm. What I want to do is make sure people are taking on the change that they want to take and that they're, you know, engaging in the change that they need to make. And I think that being dropped into a global viral event has made us a little better at that.
Absolutely. We had no choice. So why do you think change management is so difficult for organizations?
Like I said earlier, you've got the organizational challenge of making the change and running the business, but you've also got the personal pieces. And all of your humans that are involved in making that change happen have different experience levels with change, have different success levels with change, have different comfort levels with change, and have different all of that with how it used to be. So you're dealing with every single individual along the line that helps make that change happen has a different experience with it. And as a leader, the hardest thing is to get all that together.
How do you handle it when everybody's not on the same page?
You know, I think communication is huge in change management, especially in the organization. You know, people need to trust that you're going to give them the information when you have it. Because sometimes in the midst of change, you don't have all the information. And people need to literally believe that you're going to give it to them. They believe that we're all on the same team, we're in this together, and you're going to give me the information when you can. And so when somebody doesn't have that level of trust with you as a leader or with the organization, because it could be either one, then they start to get into the resistance, they get into the challenges, and that's when we need to start having some one-on-one conversations. At first, empathetic conversations saying, tell me, what's the challenges that you're having? I can tell you're not comfortable with this. What's up? There may be some things that we can solve. There may be some things we can't. Clarifying that this is the change. This is the support we have for you. We want to make sure that you stay on the team. You know, and if people continue to dig their heels in and sabotage the change, then the conversation's a little different. It's still an empathetic conversation, but it's like, we need you on board. Here's where we're going. And we'd love to have you with us. And here's what we need from you in order for that to happen. And letting them know, here's what's going to happen if you don't. So they can make their own decision. We can't control what anybody else does. But I want to give them all the information they need so they can make the best decision for themselves. And that's part of the reason why normalizing the discomfort with change makes this all a little bit easier. Because sometimes people are so in it that they think that it's bad. And sometimes it's just saying, all right, here we are. I don't like this change either. Let's go. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that being on that same level can really help move people forward.
So it's an effective approach, I think, to take. So speaking of approach, you have your 5P approach that you talk about in your book. So I'd love to hear what that is and a little bit more about it.
as I was sort of conceptualizing this book, I wanted to give it some structure so people kind of had some steps to follow. And the first P is, what's the point? And identifying, why are we doing this? What's up with this change? Why is this happening? Because as you're persevering through all the windy road of change and trying to get to that new comfort zone, ultimately, knowing why we're doing this is an important piece, right? And in a situation where we're picking the change or the organization is changing to modernize or to serve the client better, that's an easy why. But in the case of a global pandemic, sometimes it's sort of like, well, I don't know why we're doing this. I don't want to do this. And the why becomes, why can't we go back? Why can't we do things the way we did? And so clarifying that helps us to be able to say, okay, cool, I don't like it, but here we go. Second P is, what's your problem? And that's identifying your feelings with it. And we don't talk about feelings at work very much, but feelings are part of the human experience. And we have feelings about stuff. And feelings and emotions are not bad. It's what we do as a result of them that can cause problems, right? So acknowledging your feelings and saying, I hate this because I liked it the old way. I was comfortable. I knew how to do it. I was competent. I don't know if I'm going to be able to learn this new computer system. I'm scared of it, frankly, because I don't like, you know, and acknowledging all those feelings helps you say, all right, I've survived crap before. I think I can do this again. And it helps you turn away from the door of the old comfort zone. And now we move to the third P, which is, what's your plan? What's your path? What are you going to do? Start to plan. How am I going to deal with this? And this means you're looking at, what can I control? Because oftentimes in change, there's so many things out of our control. And you focus on that stuff because it's yucky. But in this step, you start to say, what can I control? What can I do to make this better? What can I do to move myself closer to that new comfort zone? And so starting to identify the path. Now, you can't spend too much time in this stage. And a lot of people do like to spend a lot of time planning, and not doing, which leads us to the fourth P, which is, punch it, Margaret. It's time to go. It is time to take action, because action shrivels anxiety. When we're sitting there in the plan, what can I control? What can I do? What can I do? We also remember all the things we can't, and the anxiety starts to come in. But as soon as we start taking action and taking those steps, that anxiety starts to wane a little bit, because we start to really believe, hey, I do have some control here. There is something I can do, and I'm not just a complete victim of this situation. I can act on it, even if it's something like talking to somebody. Even if it's like researching something online that's going to move you, you know, towards that new comfort zone, whatever it is. So punch it, Margaret, time to go. And then we persevere. Then it's just time to slog through it and keep trying new things and keep moving forward. And, you know, we want to always have this nice straight path towards our new comfort zone, towards this beautiful lighthouse at the end of this long straight path, right? But that's never, ever how it is. And if you're one of those people that wants to see the whole path, even if you see it, it's probably going to take a hard left at some time, like a complete surprise. Like, have you ever seen Harry Potter? And you know, in the dorm, the way the stairs kind of move like an Escher thing? Yeah. So it's kind of like that, where you think you know where you're going, and all of a sudden, and you're off on another path. So persevering becomes that last step to where we finally get where we're trying to go. And the new normal, even though I hate to say that, becomes our new comfort zone.
When I look back at the 27 years of TTA, in some ways, the pandemic was actually an easier way to embrace change, because we didn't have any choice.
Yep.
You know, everybody understood, we're, as we kept on hearing everybody say, which I think was kind of overused, but we're all in this together, right?
Yeah.
We all came together and all looked, okay, great. What are we going to do? We're going to quickly pivot and start doing a lot of virtual instructor-led training, which obviously, you know, we had no choice there. Started looking at doing some webinars, creating our own courses, but we were definitely more quick to move. We tend to be pretty quick to move anyhow. That's just, you know, we're a very agile company. But I know in the past, when I look at some of the changes that have happened, sometimes we've underestimated even a little change and how much effect that they could have on the organization, such as, you know, hiring a couple new managers in the organization. And, you know, we hired the managers, we tell the organization what they're doing, what they're supposed to be doing, but you don't realize how just that small change can affect people. So
I think that was an important point that we were kind of discussing prior to this conversation too, is that with change management, because it is often something that affects so many levels of an organization and their employees, that we see this ideal structure to it. But it is kind of something that needs to be more agile because of those moving Harry Potter staircases, which I love you so much more for that reference, by the way.
Well, and that's what we need to be ready for. Yeah. If we are going to bob and weave with, I mean, the modern world is changing so fast. And so it's so hard because we want to have a nice, clean way of doing things. And then all of a sudden the stairs shift and we're like, crap, I thought I had this under control, you know? And so it's this constant journey and constant, you can't get comfortable, you know, that's why getting comfortable with being uncomfortable is important.
Yeah, I 100% agree. You have to try something and see if it works. If not, you know, you move on and change to something else. And that's what business is, constantly changing and innovating.
Yeah, and there's that balance too. There's that balance where you say, okay, wait a minute, should we stick with this a little longer? Yeah. Or should we change something? And it's that constant juggling, balancing, doing the best you can. And this is the key, is you're never going to have all the information. You're never going to know if what you're doing is the right decision. And that's where the courage comes in, but that's where the fear comes in. They are their constant companions, those two little jolly elves. And it's really important to, you know, have the courage to make the changes when you realize this is right, I think. Here we go.
So when you're working with organizations, is there a certain level that you work with? Because I could imagine that if you don't get the buy-in from the C-level or the top level, the change might not work. Or maybe it just depends on the size of the change.
Yes. But the culture of positive change needs to be throughout the company in order for it to be successful and relative ease. The easiest way to get through it is where everybody's on board. Everybody in the organization is getting the same message from the C-suite, from their middle manager, from their supervisor. They're getting the same message from everybody. And that's where you create a culture where change is okay. And it's what I call an environment of safe failure, where it's okay to try stuff and not work. When I know that I'm not going to lose my job, that I'm not going to get judged, that I'm not going to get fired, that I'm not going to get punished for trying something new when it doesn't work, I'm much more likely to take on these changes and take on this stuff. And that's a cultural thing. So it does need to start at the top. And I actually had somebody come to me and say, we need you to fix our frontline team. So we need you to work with them and fix them. And I could just tell by the way they were talking that there was a very dictatorial, negative tone throughout the upper levels of management. And I said, I don't think I'm your girl. Because I don't think you're going to get the change if you're not embracing that culture as well.
So, Anne, when we were preparing for you to join us today, we were talking about some of the challenges that organizations have faced during the pandemic. And I think a lot of organizations might have focused too much on how, I guess I shouldn't say too much because it's obviously very important, but how this affects their clients, but oftentimes they might have not taken a step back to see how this has affected their employees. Have you seen any situations like that?
You know, honestly, not really. This is kind of asking the choir what was in the sermon, because the people that came to me were looking to help their employees through stuff. So I may not have a good view of it, but I think that there has been a lot more focus on how does this affect our team? Because the obvious question of productivity when you're quote unquote living at work, when you're living at school, when you're living everywhere you used to go outside of your home to get to, was in question. So I think organizations have been really thinking about their teams because they had to. You know, again, they were dropped into this thing,
Good.
Which has been great.
what do you do about the opposite then? If you've noticed something that, because change management is very important for the internal structure and the employee well-being and success, but what about when you've noticed that something is being or attempted to be implemented that would completely throw off their current business model? Mm-hmm. How do you speak to something like that?
This is where communication comes in. Mm. This is where empathetic communication comes in. And this is where listening comes in. For example, an organization that I worked with recently has a fantastic family-like culture. And they've got a lot of people who have been doing their job for 20, 30, 40 even years. And they were shifting over to an automated computer system. They weren't laying anybody off, but now the job these people used to do with their hands was going to be done through a computer, and they were needing to take this on. A huge change for people who grew up doing a job one way, and they essentially ripped the rug out from under them. And so what needed to happen was, and it did, and they did a phenomenal job with this, was communicating with that team what the change was, why it was, how it was going to affect them. It was very important to be honest at this point, but also what are we going to do to make sure you get the support you need to be able to be successful? Because ultimately, that's what we want. We are successful if you are successful. And so then the first question is, what challenges do you see? What makes you nervous about this? Let's talk about this, you know, and this is a great conversation to have with your established team. And hopefully your leaders have a great rapport with the individuals on their team. And so they can have that conversation a little better than, say, the CEO can, of what are your fears? What do you see as challenges? What do you hate about this? You know, let's have a venting meeting, because that's going to uncover not only what they're concerned about that we may be able to help them with, but maybe some things we didn't even think about because we don't have their perspective. And so that might help us manage the actual change process better. And it helps them realize they're being heard and that we care about their success. And that's going to make people a lot more courageous, because they don't feel like you're just dropping it on their head. You know, because again, you are ripping the rug out under them. You know, and even if it's just something as small as a new manager, it changes the dynamic of the workplace where people were perfectly happy before. And so taking the time to do that is an investment in their commitment to this change going forward. It takes more time. It is a patient requiring process, but it helps people feel like you're with me in this. We're in this together. And again, it is a cliche these days, but it's so important.
Yes.
That I don't feel like I'm on an island and you're going to ask me to do something that I can't do.
How do you work with organizations to help them handle somebody who is resistant to change?
No matter how good you are at that beginning communication process, there's always going to be a few people who are like, I hate this. I don't want this, you know, and that's where those one-on-one conversations that we talked about come in. That's where listening, being empathetic, understanding, hey, how can we help you get through this? And then once you've had that conversation once or twice, sometimes it takes time and they're going to grumble for a while. And sometimes you just give them some time and you start to see them getting on board. Or you start to see them not getting on board, and it's time for that other conversation where you say, here's what we need from you. This is your job now. I know you don't like it, and I'm sorry. We're here to provide the support you need, but you also need to meet us over here. And here's what's going to happen if you don't. And again, they may have had a terrible experience with change and got laid off at their last job, you know, and they feel terrible about it. And they're living in that right now. So putting yourself in their shoes will help you have more empathy and more patience in that moment, but also saying, here's what we need from you. And this is what's going to happen if we don't get that. And I hope we don't have to go there, but that's the next step. And they know, and they can then make the decision for themselves. And I've actually had a conversation with somebody where I said, do you want to be here anymore? Because you are miserable right now. And maybe with this new job, which wasn't your old job, maybe this new job isn't what you want, and maybe a big change is what you want to do. And I said, I hope you don't leave, because you've got so much institutional knowledge that I'm going to be up a creek if you are not here. Yes. However, above all of that, I want you to be a happy human. fortunately, she stayed. So,
absolutely. So, do you have any metrics that you work with on organizations on how you assess whether adoption actually took place?
It all depends on the organization. What, you know, what they're doing. I mean, productivity is an easy one. Absenteeism is a pretty easy one. Turnover is a pretty easy one. But then you can also do internal survey type things to get a read on where everybody is, you know, an anonymous type, you know, state of the union as an employee here kind of thing, and figuring out the right metric and the right measure for your organization, what you're trying to achieve. So you really do need to just look at what you're trying to achieve as an organization and find the right metrics that are going to measure the right thing. It's not just profitability. It's not just, you know, the obvious KPIs. Sometimes measuring employee satisfaction will eventually turn into that, but there's a different way you need to get at it. So you got to think about it in a creative way.
We had a conversation earlier about leadership representation and how important communication is. And some feedback that we, or part of the conversation was, well, of course I'm communicating with my team every day. Like I check in, I see how they're doing and yada, yada. But the, hey, hi, how are you? That's not communicating. So what ways have you implemented or seen organizations implement ways of communication that were effective? Are memos and emails a good thing? Is there a sandbox kind of, what approach do you take there?
Again, it depends on the team. It depends on what you're trying to achieve. It depends on the communication channels that you have. The key is to create an ongoing open communication culture where we talk to each other. We tell each other what's going wrong, and we learn how to have those conversations in an effective way so that the other person is willing to take part in that communication. So whether it's email, instant message, text, you know, we have so many ways of communicating, including this phone thing that I hear you can like hear people's voices through, which I never use it for that, but you know, like we could. And, you know, Zoom brings up another option. So figuring out how you're going to use the tools at your disposal, I like to recommend to organizations and to leaders that they create a standard of how we're going to use our different communication channels. Interestingly, people have a different judgment behind different types of communication. For example, when a client texts me out of the blue, I'm like, what are you doing in my living room? Like, this is my personal life here. Of course, they're my client. They can text me whenever they want. But that's like my initial reaction. So, and some people have that feeling about email. So if we create a standard for how we're going to use these channels, if you need a quick answer, text me. If it's going to require a little bit more or there's an attachment or anything, email it. If it's something you need an answer for right now, call me. But as we, and it's such a weird thing, but when we're not walking by each other in the hall every day, it's important to have this standard of how we're going to communicate. Once you clarify that and everybody's got the guardrails, communication can flow a little bit easier. But we cannot forget the importance of those voice-to-voice communication, because there's so much communication happens with your tone of voice. With your body language, with your facial expression, you know, that you miss in an email. I could write an email. Hey, Jocelyn, need that report Friday. Thanks, Anne. And you, having just had a bad hair day and spilled coffee in your lap, are like already in a really bad place. And you read it. Hey, Jocelyn, need that report Friday. Thanks, Anne. And suddenly we're in a fight, right? So we can't forget the importance of connecting as humans, with our voices, with our faces. That's vitally important to keeping that communication open and vulnerable.
Not even regards to change management, but I've...
No, totally. Oh, totally.
No, it's just amazing because we have our sales reps working with our recruiters and working with our project managers. And for the ones that do work in our Marlboro office, it's amazing because they will email each other and they're sitting right next to each other. It's like, turn around and you have a conversation,
you know, right.
And then they'll even sometimes, I mean, an incredible group. We all get along great and, you know, amazing teamwork. But, you know, sometimes we'll hear that maybe a recruiter goes to their manager and I haven't heard back from my sales rep yet. And the sales rep sits right next to them. So it's just, it's so funny. Everybody's just afraid to talk.
And these days, we kind of need to set that expectation with our teams, especially with, you know, not if you're not in your office every day. You kind of need to set that expectation and then be a great role model as a leader. You've got to model that and pick up the phone. I mean, when I was working in New York City for the company that owns Boston Sports Clubs, I had directors from Boston to Washington, D.C. And every once in a while, I would get on a train and I would go spend a couple days with them. And they're like, nobody's ever done this. But I'm like, show me what you're proud of. Show me where your challenges are. And that connection was huge in them feeling like I was there to help them be successful, which ultimately I was. That's a leader's job.
Absolutely.
Because I'm not doing the work. They were doing the work.
So, Ann, many years ago when we would talk about change management projects, I would look at it in a technical adoption aspect. It was probably for a company that was rolling out a new product. But now, over the last several years, it seems like when we're talking about change management, it is more from a cultural perspective. What have you seen?
Well, and I think it's both. I think any change, as you talked about earlier, any change can throw people off. And so, yes, there's a very technical side of how do we roll out a new product? How do we roll out a new computer system while keeping our organization moving forward and continue serving our clients? So there's definitely that side, the project management, we do this, then we do this, then we do this side of it. But I think more and more today, as we start to realize the emotional intelligence requirement of doing any kind of change, that we have to incorporate the soft skills and the humans and how we're guiding our teams through change as well. And I think that's been a great development over the last probably 10 years.
Yes. It's interesting. I wonder how many organizations don't have a complete plan for these technical rollouts. Because oftentimes when I look at some of ours that we've had with the new CRM, you look at the training program and plan. You look at it in different phases. We're going to train on these first modules, and then we're going to train on, you know, these next modules. But they don't look at the impact of how it affects the organization. It's almost a little bit too linear versus when you're looking at a cultural change.
And I think it depends a lot on the person initiating and driving the change. One of the most fascinating topics that I train on is personality styles. Because when we understand ourselves and our team members and how people are wired differently, it allows us to deal with them and communicate with them and in a different way that works better for them. So my point is that when you're rolling out a change and planning it, if you're one of those personality styles that's very relationship focused, you're going to have more focus on the people and on the soft skills and on the culture. And if you're one of those more technical people who's very task focused, you are going to be more focused on step, 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 this training, then we roll this out, then we push the button. And then, so I think when you have a well-rounded team who has that open culture of communication, people are able to say, hey, yeah, I know you're driving this and you've got the tasks down, but we also need to think about our teams. So it takes that 360 degree leadership style that's collaborative, that takes into account all of those personality styles. So you've got all those strengths and you hit all the edges. And I think one of the big problems is that sometimes organizations don't. One person drives it and they have that typical personality style that drives it a certain way. And that can impact the success or the speed and efficiency and grace of the change.
There are so many layers to change management. You understand that because it's always a big task, but I think you don't realize the breadth of it until you're kind of dialing into it the way that we are.
Anytime you deal with humans,
right?
Right? If it weren't for the rest of the people, this would be easy.
Right.
But anytime you bring humans into it, that's why I train not only on change management, but on emotional intelligence and communication, because they are inextricably linked.
Oh, yeah. Like I say it all the time. Anytime anything happens, my excuse is like, well, there's humans being humans again. like everything in the world, whether it's basic and small or it's a national disaster. It's humans being humans.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we certainly know that.
Yeah, right.
And it's kind of level setting your expectation, right? They're not you. They're not going to do things the way you do it. And setting that expectation as, okay, we're dealing with humans here, kind of allows you to have that moment of levity to say, all right, this is how it goes, rather than being all super angry and frustrated and stuck there.
Now, given that there's so many layers to this, what would you say is the best way to develop a feedback plan?
It goes right back to that open communication, that vulnerable, collaborative communication where we are comfortable saying, this isn't right, this isn't okay, I'm not comfortable with this, this is going wrong. And once we've got that culture, giving feedback is just part of that culture. And not only will you give me feedback as your employee, but I can give you some feedback as your boss. And this requires teaching people how to do it. We aren't naturally good at giving people feedback, especially those of us who are very relationship focused, because we don't want to cause conflict. We don't want to make somebody feel bad, you know, and so we'll avoid it at all costs, but then stuff doesn't get solved. And so teaching this is where this training thing comes full circle, is you got to teach your people how to communicate the negative stuff. And once everybody has that knowledge, then they can march forward together, assuming positive intent. I see what you're doing here. You're trying to make us stronger. We have this unspoken agreement or a spoken agreement that we're going to communicate openly. And now we can do it. And we can move forward with having these tough conversations. Now, once that's part of your culture, again, having them effectively, having them respectfully, and having them with the intent to improve the whole team and the whole organization, now the feedback becomes easy because it's part of what we do.
When you're working with large international companies that have multiple locations, how do you handle the whole change management process if you're working with one branch in the headquarters, but the change will have a ripple effect through the other locations?
Well, and I think that's part of that planning process, is to say, what are the ripples? And it's important to talk to a lot of different people in a lot of different parts of the organization to say, here's what we're going to do. How do you think that's going to affect you? And again, the bigger it gets, the harder it is. But it's really important in that planning time not to keep it in the silo. You know, silos are important to a degree because we need to get stuff done in our little silo. However, there are ripple effects. And so we need to make sure that we have that cross-departmental communication to be able to say, here's what's coming down the pipe. And this, all this communication stuff takes time. It takes patience. It takes time. And it takes time. But it's an investment in the success down the road, not only from a technically getting the steps right and understanding what the ripples are so they can prep for that, but also so Bob in the other silo isn't like, yo, what are you doing here? Like, you just messed up my whole stream, you know? And now we're dealing with Bob and me in a fight, which is no fun. And it takes time and it is boring, but ultimately that should make it more efficient once we get rolling.
I believe a lot of organizations underestimate the amount of time and knowledge that's needed to successfully have a change transformation.
And that's why that culture of open communication is really important, and having those connections that we just connect with periodically. Then when we have a conversation with them, you know, Bob and I, it's not like I haven't talked to Bob in a year and a half and suddenly I'm appearing out of nowhere telling him about to mess up what's happening in his part of the organization. Having those connections and having that network throughout the organization can help open culture of communication.
Bringing it back to the fear and the courage that you said, because you said, you know, it takes a lot of time. It's an investment. I think investment can be a scary word for people. So I like that you kind of brought it back full circle for us, from the thing that you were speaking to in the beginning down to what it actually takes to have effective change management. Now, we wanted to bring you in to talk about this because we love your approach to it. You're dynamic, engaging. It's refreshing how you bring humor and reality to the forefront of everything that you're doing. But that's not all Anne Bonny's about. So do you want to tell us a little bit more about like the other things that you do outside of change management? You know, you do the podcast. I know I saw on your website that maybe you're taking me to Costa Rica in December. So
you coming with us? All right. So yeah. So the podcast is Ignite Your Influence. And a couple months ago, I shifted it as I shift my business. It was Igniting Courage. And I used to have conversations with people about where courage showed up in their lives. And so as my business has evolved, I evolved the podcast, but all those Igniting Courage podcast episodes are still there if you want to go see them. But it's now called Ignite Your Influence. Because as we think about change and dealing with change, we think about emotional intelligence and we think about effective communication, which are the three big pillars of my business under leadership. Having influence with people is key. Having them want to do business with you, want to talk to you, want to be vulnerable with you, want to trust you in the change. All those things require influence. So now I interview people and I have my own episodes about how to build your influence. I also am starting to do women's influence intensives, 3-day retreats. I've been kicking around this idea for 3 years and I want to get it right because I love when like-minded people come together and are just able to be vulnerable, talk about things, but then have genuine breakthroughs. In a 5-hour seminar, I can plant some seeds. But when I get people who are the right people in the right room, for 3 days to really dig into what keeps us from being influential and how can we look at what we're doing in ourselves to be more influential, I know true personal transformation can be made, right? So I'm diving into that. I think I'm going to start those this fall. I want to do it in person. I do well on virtual, but this particular thing, as you said, Costa Rica, I also want to do in some fantastic locations.
So I guess that. I'll have to have all of our women at the company go to Costa Rica.
There we go. Maybe we have a specific PTA
one. I know. Yes. That sounds amazing.
I cannot wait to tell all the fellas.
And you did some amazing virtual classes for us, and I've never seen such incredible feedback and testimonials. One of the classes that you did is managing remote teams, which obviously is a very popular subject right now. Do you want to talk a little bit about that and some of your other classes that you see very popular this year?
Managing remote teams has become very relevant. How to be a great virtual team member. You know, what do we need to do to stay productive? How do we communicate? And both of those are, you know, we're in a new world here. And honestly, even once the pandemic has kind of settled down and life kind of gets back to where it's going to settle out or whatever, whatever that means, I think virtual is going to be still a huge piece of our business and in our lives and the way we work. So learning how to effectively embrace this as not a temporary thing, but as a permanent thing. How do I keep people motivated? How do I keep people productive? How do I communicate? And all of that. So we cover all that in both managing virtual teams and being a virtual team member, which also includes the stress management and how to deal with your stuff and stay productive. But another one that's been big this year is how to present virtually, how to have virtual meetings, and how do I show up so that I can build credibility, whether it's with my clients, whether it's with my teams, whether it's with the board and I got to do an important presentation on this Zoom thing. How do I present? Because I've done a lot of public speaking training for organizations as well. So that just lended itself to how do I show up virtually, which I've gotten some great feedback on as well. So those are some of the big ones this year that have been relevant to the changes that have gone on in the workplace.
Unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. Totally believable.
Anne, you are a true reflection of the name of our podcast, Bring Out the Talent. You have an embarrassment of talents.
I was pretty embarrassed to come on the show to share my talents, but here I am, you know?
No, we get that a lot.
You really, really do. And I know we focused a lot on change management, but as we just discussed, there's so many other topics that you help organizations with, and we certainly would love to have you back and talk more about some of these other topics that you work with organizations on.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's do it.
Well, thank you, Ann, so much for joining us. It has been a pleasure. You are incredibly engaging, dynamic, as I said before. So we look forward to scheduling something again in the future. And thank you for joining us on Bring Out the Talent.
Thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
For more information on today's podcast guests and how they can help your organization, please visit www.thetrainingassociates.com.
Bring Out the Talent is a Mudhouse Media production.